interview that Catherine, Joe's sister, will give us some information. You know, do you? How old was Joe? When did he start?
I was about 18 years old. Around 18, started on guitar.
Guitar, right, right. Did he take any formal, any private lessons on guitar at that time?
Yes, he did, but I don't remember the teacher's name.
Right, right.
But he did take formal lessons.
Right. Did he play any other, well, he probably played keyboard, piano, a little bit.
He played piano, keyboard when he would be arranging their arrangements.
Because he went to, he studied at Carnegie Tech.
Yes.
For arranging.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes. Was he in, do you recall him playing like in some of the teenage bands or early, you know, like as a 20-year-old?
He was playing the Harlemites.
Harlemites.
Yeah.
Do you remember some of the guys that was in that band with him?
Dotton Brothers. No.
That's all right. When do you recall when he became a band leader himself? About how early? In the 30s or 40s?
I would say around in the 40s.
Well, I know it was
in the 40s.
In the 40s, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because do you remember much about the old Musicians Club?
Yes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because that in 42, I think that's when it was established.
42?
Yeah, 40. Well, I have
not before that.
Well, probably the early 40s, 41. But I have some bylaws when it was I have a constitution and bylaws for that. But it was written this was written up in 42. But it probably was early 40s.
Early 40s.
Because I started working with Joe in the 50s. In fact, I took Warren Watson's place when he switched from trumpet.
When he left.
Yeah.
Well, were you with him when Reba George?
Right, Reba was singing with him, you know, mm-hmm. and I was with him after Robin Webster.
Webster.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, and then Stanley came in later on.
Yes, he went with Stanley and then came in. I was around, but
right.
See, I went over to live at Joe's house in 47.
47, on Center Avenue?
No.
Oh.
On Anaheim.
That's right, on Anaheim.
Right, yeah. Because I was around him all my life.
Right.
That's when I went over there.
Did you play anything?
I dabbled a little in piano, but nothing to...
Nothing serious.
Yeah. I've often regretted it, though.
Well, yeah. Was he somewhat of a gifted person? You know, I mean, did things come easy to him? When he first
I think so.
Yeah.
But he worked hard at it too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it sort of came.
Yeah.
Music was his whole
mind.
Right. Yeah. And I used to sit beside him on the piano stool sometimes when he would be ranging.
Right.
And everything had to. And then when he would be rehearsing the band, I would be in. Everything
had to be right.
And
one of the things I find about his arrangements, if we were to. I think Joe was a little bit ahead of his time in terms of arranging.
I think
because so. If we were to play those things now, they would work.
Yeah, well, who else around here was arranging?
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
I don't, of course, I didn't know him, but I don't. Most of them were playing stock arrangements.
Well, yeah, a lot of them were. Because I remember one of the things, I remember Joe taking a thing off of recording. It was one of those organ things, mm-hmm. and he orchestrated it for the group, and I forget what it was, and then I remember the DBR blues that he did for Davy Roberts. We used to play that thing, you know.
So you
see, because I was part of the band.
At the street dance?
Yeah, because we used to go there, because I remember when the, I think the Georgie Benson used to come around.
Yes,
and Joe
I
would
remember.
Just, and Joe would go in his pocket just giving money because he knew that George That's was right. going to win the talent.
I remember when he come up and right. Joe stood him up on
right.
the chair.
Right, right, to play. Yeah.
That's right.
Because I think 1951, it was the year that Jersey Joe Walcott and Floyd Patterson.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
At the fight.
Right. And we played the street dance, Leo Wild in the playground,
yeah.
and they came up. It was 4th of July. You know,
yeah,
summertime.
Always
4th yeah, of July. Yeah, summertime.
Yeah.
Did Joe, did he ever do any traveling, you know, with other bands? Did he ever go on a road or anything?
The only
like
traveling I remember him doing, do you remember Club,
no,
Club Mirador in Homestead?
Yeah, in Homestead.
Okay.
I don't
he
know, I've heard
there,
about it.
You heard about it. Yeah. He was there with the band, Larry Steele.
Oh, okay.
And Jimmy Watkins,
okay.
Helen Watkins.
Okay.
Jimmy Watkins played sax, Helen sang with the band. Huh. They went to Cincinnati.
Okay.
At the Cotton Club.
Cotton Club, right, right.
And I think Joe was on around, I think this is what I'm remembering about him being on, and somewhere between 1820 and somewhere
mm-hmm.
very young. I think he was one of the youngest in the band.
Was he?
That's where he got his name, Mize. You ever hear him call him?
No, I never heard that.
Honey Boy and them used to call him Mize.
Miser?
Yeah. Because when they were over there in Cincinnati, they, you know how
I mean. Yeah, I know.
Anybody else,
right, right.
They'd get broke and everything.
Right, right.
And Joe always kept him some money.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking at a Cotton Club. This is a roster from 1941. And there's some names on there. There's a few guys that were at the Cotton Club in Cincinnati playing. Benton Garner.
Yeah.
And several of those guys were over there. Ray Crawford, guitar player.
Yeah, I remember Ray, because he went on the sax.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's several names on there. Kenny Fisher's dad. Kenny Fisher gave me that. But it just goes up to L. You know, the beginning of the alphabet up to L, because the Humphreys brothers, their names are on there, Frank and Hubert.
When you bring them
yeah.
up, Smuts Humphrey, Frank Humphrey.
Is that what you call him, Smuts?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. That's
Hilbert.
Yeah, Hilbert.
But they call him Smuts.
Smuts, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Frank.
And I know the last time Joe and I went to New York,
uh-huh.
he went to see, he called him up.
Right.
So when we were there, well, I'm saying he'll come, but Frank came down.
To,
I don't know
to
what
visit.
To
call. Yeah.
And that's been quite a
yeah,
while.
Quite a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, because when you mentioned that Mirador,
yeah,
you know,
they used to broadcast.
Yeah, see.
Every night.
Because Curtis Young, you know Curtis Young? Kurt Young? Because he played drums back in them early days until 1946, I think it was, he said. He got a job at the Board of Education.
I should.
You'd know him. If you'd see him, you'd remember him.
I probably
yeah.
would.
But then he had something to do with the union. He was on one of the committees or something at the union. In 46, I think it was, he said he got this job and he just stopped playing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do
oh,
that.
Oh, I'd have to
that.
Know him.
You'd know him. Because he's 80. He's 81 years old, and he's the one that's hooking me up with a lot of stuff. Like through the 30s and the 40s.
What's this other young that has these shows out at the library?
Oh, Harold Young.
Harold Young.
Yeah, well, he's a youngster.
Yeah, because I didn't know
no,
him.
No, he's not. He wasn't that active anyway. You know?
No, I didn't think so.
Do you remember? Did Joe like some of the clubs in town? I mean, around here, you know, can you recall some of the places where Joe played with his band? You know.
Oh, you mean right around the city?
Yeah, yeah, close to home.
Most of his playing, it was during wartime. He'd be all out in Fairton and
cabarets and dances
yeah,
and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Did he ever play like at the Harlem Casino or those places?
Oh, Harlem Casino, yeah.
Yes, he did.
And Larry Steele and them all back to Harlem Casino.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, on Roberts or
yeah,
Hellman and
yeah,
Center.
Right, and Center, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a picture of a band. It's Leroy Brown's, I think he's supposed to be the band leader.
But Leroy ain't never been band leader.
But Joe was playing guitar. Earl Garner was playing piano.
Yes.
Ghost Howell was playing
Wait
bass.
A minute.
You got the information for me.
Nah, I got all this together before.
Yeah, well, that's good. We'll find it. Yeah.
And every one of them's dead.
I know. Well, that's the picture that I have.
And that's the picture that Earl Garner had to stand right behind the piano because the shoe had no shoes.
Ain't that something? Yeah, that's a picture that I have.
Yeah.
And Whippy, you know Whippy, Bill Mosby?
Yeah.
Well, see, he used to go with my mother, and when I got my trumpet, this is in 1936, when I got my trumpet. And I went in at Christmas time to visit my mother, and Whippy wrote the notes to the scale in the fingering. He didn't tell me what the notes were, but he just wrote them. And so when I went off my Christmas vacation, I could play the scale when I went back to school because I was in sixth grade. So then I went in a band in May on just with
you went
with
in
his,
with Jeff.
With, no. Oh, I'm talking about the high school, school band.
Yeah.
You know, and but Whippy used to come home. His aunt lived next door to me when I lived on Upland Street up here, and he used to come in and I've known him all. In fact, even when he died, because he was a very close friend of mine.
And
but that
he's
picture,
been dead
yeah,
quite a while. Eh?
Yeah. And what's this?
That's, those are
okay,
the
right.
Pictures I have.
Right. Well, that's good. Fine. I can make it. Bobby Boswell. Yeah. Who's the drummer? Is that Bob Story? Or is that somebody else?
Looks like Burt Logan.
Is it Burt Logan?
That's what it looks like to me.
Okay, all right, maybe so. Okay.
And Billy Branson.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's good. But I'll make copies of these, and I'll get all this stuff back to you.
I should have a million pictures, but with Joe moving and then living up there.
Right, right.
And when he died, I mean, I'm lucky to have these.
Yeah.
If you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have had
these. Right. See, unfortunately, I mean, we're doing this thing much too late.
But at least you do.
Yeah, we're doing it. See, that's one of the things about it. And there's a lot of information of you know, Joe and Brown and Honeyborn and people like that. Okay, is this Black Salt. Okay, well, that's like Top Magazine thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good.
I wondered if you had seen
that. Well, that's Stoney Gloster. This is his early band. Woo!
Well, that's the same pictures.
It might be some of the same guys.
Because here's Stoney.
Because, Guy Hunter and guys, yeah. Okay, well, that's fine. That's
Smokey.
Fine. Smokey, right. That was the drummer.
Penny, yeah.
Right, okay. Penny. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because all of these things are going to help. See, what's happening, we're trying to get memorabilia and information
yeah,
like
that's
this.
All you can
see, because that's all we can deal with.
Yeah. But and, even so, like it may be late, but it's better late than never.
Right.
Yeah. I just appreciate your even.
Well,
you know, taking time.
Yeah. Well. See, part of it, we've got too many guys that are. I mean, I don't want to say ego comes into play, but you know how that goes. See, and they're too busy, you know, doing promoting themselves and for other reasons. And my thing is, you know, I mean, they're the reason I'm doing what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, because Joe was the first professional band in the city that I worked with.
And
you know,
he was one of the first professional bands in the city.
Right.
And Evan and I always say to anybody who has ever been a professional has worked with him.
Had to come through Joe Westray's band.
That's right.
See, they had to come
whether
through
whether they
that
want
band.
To admit
right.
it or not.
Right. You had to come through that band. I mean, if you developed as a player.
Right.
See, we've got some other guys.
Well, it's just was
right.
satisfied to sit there
right.
and honky-tonk.
Right. But Joe, the products out of his band have made it. They're all
yes,
good musicians.
All of them.
They're all good musicians. I talked to Robert Webster just
the
other day.
Robert.
Yeah, he's doing good. Robin's doing good, you know, because he came to the photo shoot.
Oh, I'd love to see him. My daughter ran into him one day.
Yeah.
He didn't know she was my daughter.
Yeah.
She's I was reading an article in one of the magazines I had, and they had this is a white band player. Anyhow, they said, and on bass, Wyatt Ruther.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Dave Brubeck.
Dave Brubeck.
Right.
I said, what have I seen that?
Yeah. Well, he was here. See, Wyatt comes in. Yeah, well, he's been in a couple of years. His brother was teaching up at Slippery Rock College, one of his brothers, and he just retired just this past summer. Wyatt came in. They had a retirement party for him, and Wyatt came in, and Carl Arter, and Ron Tucker. You know, there's a drummer around here now.
I don't know.
Okay, well, he came from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. He's been here since the mid-70s, and so they went up and played up at Slippery Rock, and I got to talk to Wyatt. I interviewed him.
Does he still have his school? I talked to him, he had a school in Canada.
Well, no. He's living in San Pueblo, California now, but he's playing. He's working all the time, you know. And he's still teaching.
School.
Oh, he's a good baseball. He was in PMI with me and Doc and somebody else. We were all down there together when he got the job with Brubeck. Yeah, that was, I think, around 1954.
I didn't hear from him.
Yeah. Because he used to play trombone years ago. In fact,
when I met him, he was playing bass. Yeah.
Well, here, he's in this book. This is the reason, another reason why I kind of got off on this. He's over here with the hat playing trombone. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I can see.
Right.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he played trombone first. Yeah,
well, he had to be awfully young.
Well, he played trombone in Westinghouse.
Oh.
See, and then he went to the Army, and then something happened. They needed a bass player, so he started playing bass.
Oh, because that's then, about when
right,
I met him.
Right, mm-hmm. After he got out of the Army.
That's something I never knew that.
Yeah, because he said
Wyatt Bull.
Right. And he's got quite a few, you know, quite a bit of input on this particular book. See, this is the book. I copied nickel a page.
Good.
And
Lord.
I stole the book. See, but I want people to know what they, I mean, they don't have any more than we had. See, this might be written up a little more flowery and a little more, but we had
want the facts.
No, we got the right, we got to show enough stuff here. We've got to show enough stuff. Do you recall, and Joe never went on the road with any other band, was what I was getting at.
No. And the reason why I imagine that Joe didn't go on the road is because he was in business, business. Yeah. And he had to be here.
Right.
And then Joe, he wanted to leave.
Right.
Because he worked enough here.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. See, a lot of guys were so, you know, they were so involved here. See, I knew of Joe, I knew his father. Yeah, see, because my grandfather was a deacon in Mount Zion Baptist Church.
In
Bellevue. See, and visiting, because I think...
Oh, yeah,
because
he's the guy there with this lady that sang out there.
Bertha Horn. Right, see, and I knew of Joe, but I really wasn't that much into music, see, until I got out of the Navy.
You're much younger than Joe.
Well, I'm 70 now.
Joe died in 80, and I think it was 80-something.
Yeah, it was the middle of, yeah. But he would be what now? Late 80s?
He'd be about 84.
84. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. 84. It would have been 84 in June.
Right. The early days, there was a lot of dances, a lot of cabarets, and a lot of parties and things like that. Did Joe and him, did they dress in tuxedos and in formal attire?
No, I think the only time they might have dressed in Texas was when they were at the Harlem Casino.
Okay.
Because at that time, you know, that was a very formal.
Right.
We weren't allowed in.
I know.
That's true.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
And that would be about the only time that I have known him to, you know, wear a
tux. And most of the time, the other things were probably like maybe a black suit for other things.
I can't even see anything on here that would...
Or just the suit and a tie.
Now here, there.
Yeah, well, that's the tuxedos there, but this is just they're just suit and a tie.
Yeah.
On that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I know when I was with the band, that's all it was. It was
that's
a dark. You know, they say a dark suit. If you ain't got a dark suit, wear what you got. As long as you wear a tie.
Right.
you know.
You had to be dressed.
Right, you had to be dressed. And those years, my early years with Joe, taught me that. And in the mid, I'll say, the mid-60s, because I went on the road with Lloyd Price in 59. And I came back, and I was working with Chuck Edwards.
Oh, yes, okay, Lord.
And that dumb stuff. And there wasn't no dressing. You know, we didn't get dressed, you know, because there ain't no point in...
Well, it was almost going into the rock and roll.
Right, that's just what it was. Yeah. That's just what it was.
Were you with Lloyd when he played at Joe's Place on Lincoln?
No, I'll tell you why I wasn't. Because I got fired. See, I got fired, and then I went back in September. Mm. But I did the recordings, you know, we did Ed Sullivan, because that's what it was all about.
Yeah.
We did Ed Sullivan, and we made a couple recordings. We did. That's when we did Personality, Ever Had the Blues, and most things from the studio. So Lloyd, they were holding our money, and I went to 802 to the union in New York to find out, you know, I mean, what I can do. Mm. So they said, you know, they want Joe and them, I mean Lloyd and them wanted to give us radio broadcast money for that television performance, and it was about $20 difference. See,
$20 at that time
meant a lot. I was only making $25 a night, you know. So I went to the union. They said no, and the word got to Logan, Harold Logan, that was Lloyd's manager, about me going to the union. He got in my chest and. And they fired me. They brought me home. They fired me down strictly down to Legion. You know. So then
you could walk.
Right. So then Joe and him came back to Westray's later on. Mm. Then I went back in the band in September, and I stayed till March of 1960. Oh. But I wasn't on that Misty when they did Misty, because he had like Red Holloway and Al Gray and all these good players, because they were working out in New York. You know.
Mm.
But like I said, Joe taught me, you know, the respectability for musicians. You know, you had to be dressed. You had to carry yourself a certain way.
Yeah.
You know. Did is that Reva?
Yeah, that's Reva.
What other girls do you recall?
Oh, Dakota State.
And Dolores Ware for a little while, too.
Dolores, and there was another.
Yeah, there was another girl.
And I can't think of that child's name.
Terry. Wasn't there a Terry somebody?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I can't think of her name.
But Reva George.
Yeah, was the main one.
Was the best.
Yeah, she was the main one.
Yeah, she could sing. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, because John Morris was on the band when I went on. John Morris and Specs... Thompson, the saxophone player.
Lord, yes.
Yeah.
Well, when you start calling them.
Yeah. And then for a while, Bob Lowry, remember the kid who used to ride a motorcycle? I think he was an accident. Played drums. Bob Lowry.
He sees me now, and I don't know him. He knows me.
Yeah.
I think he's still.
Is he still around? I don't know, because I haven't seen him for quite a while.
Well.
And then Bob, I know Bob Story died. Bob Story was a drummer.
I remember him slightly.
Yeah.
Not too well.
But I remember, what's a place where Not Manor is now? They used to go across from the YMCA on Center Avenue. Mm-hmm. Didn't they do some kind of a, weren't they having some kind of an annual thing? You know, it was a big ball field.
I don't remember.
And we played there. This was before they put that apartment thing, Knott's Manor.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I don't remember.
Okay. So it was a long time ago.
The only thing that I can remember is being an annual thing for 30-some years. As long as Dave Roberts stayed in office.
Because he used to take care of them folks on the hill.
Yes.
Yeah, he took care of them people.
And he took care of Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But that's the only annual.
Right.
And then I remember him playing. He was the first black person that played in the Light Civic Opera.
Right.
They had it at Pitt Stadium.
Right, right.
That was before they went from Pitt Stadium
to Melody Tent on the hill, because they were busy dealing with with the arena.
And he was the first
black
person that I ever, bandit or whatever,
to
be in that.
Right.
Because I remember my father taking me.
Mm-hmm. And then I think, didn't Bill Cotton and them sing, or were they connected at that same time? Was there a singing group?
I don't think so. This is what, this was on. Roberta.
Oh, the show was Roberta.
The show was Roberta. Okay. And they needed a black guitar player for that. Okay. So I don't think anybody, Cotton and them was in then. Okay. That probably
later on, because he talks about his Civic Light Opera experience. And so
well, that was the only time the show was in it.
Right. And,
right. At that time, I think he was the only guitar. Banjo.
Oh, you played banjo?
Banjo.
Ah, okay.
And,
okay.
I think he didn't play banjo much, but
played. It's so strange, yeah.
Yeah, because they won the jazz scene in Paris.
In the club, right. Mm-hmm. Where did Joe go to school? You know, high school?
Peabody.
Oh, you went to Peabody?
Oh. Fort Pitt Elementary and Peabody High.
Oh. From this area,
Garfield.
Yeah, Garfield.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's where I was born.
Oh, right. Yeah. How long after you graduated? You know, how much time was it before he started taking arranging at Carnegie Tech?
Oh, well, he didn't take Cook. He took private lessons.
Right. Okay.
First. He didn't go to Carnegie. I think years later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did he graduate from there or just take courses?
I think he just took
some
music
courses, arranging courses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember that was part of the thing, you know, I heard about when I started working with him, you know, that he had studied at Carnegie Tech, you know.
Yeah, well, it wasn't like it was a 4-year.
No. Okay. Okay. Did you do much traveling with Joe, you know?
Outlying times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, every chance I got.
Yeah, as much as you
could. We'd go up to Altoona, Johnstown, Clarendon, anywhere when I wasn't working.
Right.
And
right.
That's one thing Joe would always take me.
Extend it to you, yeah.
Yeah, if he had you know, enough room.
I'll tell you one something that really... I'll never forget this because it impressed me so. We went to Meadville. I went to Meadville with Joe in that Cadillac of his.
When he wrecked it?
No, I wasn't on that one. But he let me drive that Cadillac coming back because I think either he was tired or whatever.
Probably tired.
You know, and coming back because I had that Cadillac.
Well, see what Joe would do at 5 o'clock or 6, I don't remember the time. Those trucks had to be out the amp.
Right.
And he had to either take my or see that they got there.
Right.
And Pooch and I was talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
He would come home, take a bath, lay across the bed for about an hour or so, maybe have a bite, get right up.
And do the gig.
Every night.
I know.
Yes.
But that's the life of a musician.
See, some.
Yeah. Well, some, yeah, but a lot of us, because I recall the same thing. I drove truck 6 days a week, you know, and I was playing that little Paris.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you can, I know what Joe was going through.
Oh, yeah.
You know, although he got up much earlier than I did, you know.
Well, I think it was 5, 6
hours. Yeah,
They had to be, them trucks had to be out there before them B&B trucks came in.
Right, you had to take care of the business.
Yeah.
You know, when you start talking about these days, it does bring happy feelings over you,
it does.
Because it's fond remembrances of these kinds of things.
I tell my daughter all the time, I have a long and a strong, what is the word I want to use? Legion. Well, I have a lot of memories, and that's not the word I want to use there, but I think you know what
I mean.
Legend.
Okay.
When I look back, and there is nowhere that I do not go in this city or surrounding area that someone don't know.
Right, they know who you are. Right.
Yeah, that makes me feel good.
Sure, because part of it is the fact that Joe has left a legacy here.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, he
that's
has left
exactly
a legacy.
Exactly what
see,
I'm trying to say.
See, unfortunately, we've got some right now, and I hate to. Mm-hmm. We've got some people that don't want to give proper due to people that it's due to.
And why? It's not going to hurt them.
No, it's not. It's not going to hurt them at all. You know, I mean, in fact, it would help them if they would realize it.
That's right. You know. And why after all these years?
Yeah.
When deep down in their hearts they know,
hey,
that it's true.
If he, and I think, and probably you can kind of clear this up, that music school that he was trying to establish.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know, you want to give me some information on that?
I don't know much about that.
Okay.
I really?
Because I remember, in fact, I think... part of what I had heard, there was supposed to have been a building down on Penn Avenue, somewhere near the 16th Street Bridge.
Okay. He had bought the property at 16th and Penn.
Right. Yeah.
And at that time, they had little stores
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. He was in the process furnished the inside of this big building to have a club or school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Stanley was supposed to open that up in that September.
Okay.
The morning that Joe died, the man called, and I was at the house, the man called, and I answered the phone.
Mm-hmm.
He was waiting for Joe to come down. They were going to pour the concrete floor.
Yeah.
And I told him that
Joe
passed.
Yeah. Because I remember, because Doc Miller